This is the TSN MMA show with Aaron Bronstetter and Bazooka Joe Valtellini.
Georges St-Pierre breaks the silence. Did UFC 222 give us a glimpse at the UFC's next generation? Overeem versus Blades is official for UFC 225 in Blades' backyard, Chicago, Illinois. Could Bisping's last fight be against Rockhold? And we are joined by the best fighter to never fight in the UFC, although Joe might take exception to that comment, Ben Askren, who will respond to comments made by GSP earlier this week. That should be fun. And you just got back from the Netherlands, Joe.
Yes,
good card?
It was okay. I'm going to be honest with it. It was okay. Those who watch kickboxing knew that Badr Hari was back, so that was the excitement. Badr versus Hezdy Gurgis. The other fights I thought were going to perform, but they just didn't. We had a welterweight tournament that I was pumped for, and I was like, it was just, there wasn't much excitement. So.
Did I see Hezdy hinted potentially wanting to go to the UFC, or is it a different fighter I'm thinking of?
No, not Hezdy. No. Hezdy and Badr, like, there was a thing with Badr Hari. He was saying how he's like, oh, you know, everybody's asking to go to MMA and to boxing. Goes, kickboxing is the sport. Mm-hmm. Like, this is where it is. If they want to challenge me, they come here. So Badr's taking this whole, like, I'm repping kickboxing stance. So
Joe Rogan had Schaub on this week, and he was really touting glory, saying he'd rather watch a really exciting kickboxing fight than a boxing match.
Joe Rogan was at my world title fight. That's how we first met. He's a huge kickboxing fan. I don't like that he says that MMA is better. Muay Thai is better. Mm-hmm. But he's a purist in his stand-up fighting. Like, he likes the elbows and the clinching, where I'm more kickboxing based.
Yeah, he comes from a Taekwondo background, right?
Yeah, I was disappointed Brandon Schaub's not into kickboxing, but
It seemed like he had no interest in it.
Zero.
But then again, he's working for Showtime now, and he's got a boxing show.
Yeah, but his big point is always, like, you can be a fan of everything, you know? Yeah. Why do you have to be a fan of one or the other? So watch kickboxing, Brandon. Come on.
Mm-hmm. But we'll have to have him on one day and talk
it
out.
That's it. Talk it out. Yell at each other.
So UFC 222 is in the books. Before we start on that, Georges St-Pierre was on the MMA Hour with Ariel Helwani this past week. And really said he'd only return for a fight that grew his legacy, and then when asked about a whole bunch of different options, had nothing to go. Basically, there was nothing that stood out to him right now.
He said, "Yeah, I want to come back, but it has to make sense." Yeah. And then all the top names,
every scenario,
he
didn't
denied.
Make sense.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's not good. No, this one's not good because he was offered. Ariel Helwani said Nate or Nick.
Yeah.
Then they said Conor McGregor, obviously, and Ben Askren.
Yeah, eventually asked
and
about
Tyron
Askren.
Woodley.
Yeah, and Woodley.
Yeah, and none of them made sense to him.
Yeah, and then he was sort of hinting if somebody can get a belt and grow there. The guy that I was thinking that might be on his mind is Khabib. Like, if you think about it from that standpoint, like, you look at a guy like Khabib who's undefeated. If he gets a belt on him, George mentioned that one of the weight classes he'd be interested in fighting, he said 155, 170, 185. 155 obviously falls directly into that wheelhouse with Khabib. They've got a show reportedly booked in Russia in September. So what happens if Conor says, I'm not going to fight Khabib? Yeah. Maybe George gets the call, but I don't know. I'm thinking a little bit too far ahead right now and trying to really decode what George was saying.
I don't think so. If he's saying no to Tyron or if he's saying no to Conor, I think he's going to say no to Khabib.
Yeah, and the Ben Askren, to me, I think that's the fight to make. And we'll talk to Ben Askren later on in the show. He was basically said that George was contradicting himself, but we'll listen to that a little bit later on and hear what's on the mind of the funky one, Ben Askren. Do you agree that he's the best fighter to never fight in the UFC? Mixed martial arts?
I would probably say so. I'd have to agree with that. I definitely have to agree
with that. Fedor's in the conversation, obviously.
Yeah, those would probably be the two.
Yeah, probably. The thing about Fedor is, though, he fought in the Wild West.
Yeah.
Whereas Askren comes from, like, a wrestling background, like, heavily tested, and I don't know.
We really haven't seen Askren in the big stages of the show where Fedor we got to see in, like, the big shows in Japan.
Although that being said, like,
we got to see more potential out of him.
You know, I mentioned this to Ben. Rory beat Douglas Lima recently, and it was like 49-46, 48-47, and 48-46, something along those lines. It was a pretty close fight. Whereas Askren destroyed Douglas Lima. And we're talking about 6 years ago Douglas Lima, probably a different Douglas Lima, but
definitely.
He destroyed Douglas Lima. And he destroyed Andre Koroshkov, who beat Douglas Lima. You know, and who beat Ben Henderson. You know, like, Askren was a killer. Like, nobody even came close to beating Askren, other than some people say Jay Huron gave him a bit of a fight early on in his career. But, I mean, Ben, I think in his last four fights, took, like six strikes. Like, absorbed six strikes or something crazy like that.
But I just think there's two sides to it, right? You have your technical side, and in this day and age, that's not enough. You're going to need that you know, ability to promote yourself, to build fights, and I don't think he has that real personality to.
Well, I don't know. Ben's pretty outspoken. He's a decent interview. He's not afraid to speak his mind. But at the same time, you kind of have to respect George's point that he never fought in the UFC. Yeah. Doesn't have the profile.
It's not the right fight for George.
Yeah,
definitely.
Who do you think is the right fight for George? Connor?
From a business standpoint, listening to what he's saying with Helwani saying. Now he's doing intermittent fasting, which he's down to walking around between 180 and 185. That's a lightweight now.
Yeah.
Which I mean,
yeah,
that's
Michael
no
Chiesa
longer,
cuts from that weight.
Yeah, like that's not a welterweight anymore. That's a mm-hmm. very small welterweight. There's not many welterweights who walk around 180, 185.
Yeah,
so
right.
I think the fight for the UFC, the biggest money fight, I still think it should be Conor.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm with you. I think if you want to make the biggest fight from a box office standpoint, I mean, Faraz recently just said that he thinks that would be bigger than Mayweather-McGregor. I mean, I will disagree with that.
I disagree with
but
that.
But at the same time, if you can get in the ballpark and you're strictly an MMA fight, I think it could be the best-selling UFC ever. Because you're bringing the old audience and the new audience and the mainstream audience. Like, you're dipping into every pool.
And how passionate Canadians are to support George and the Irish to support Connor. It would be crazy.
Yeah, it'd be crazy. Have it in a stadium.
They'd have to do, like, a world tour. They'd have to do that, like, right, like they did with the Mayweather fight.
And you'd see Connor get under George's skin. He'd do the thing with his tongue.
Oh, for sure.
Tongue in the side of the cheek when he's annoyed.
I think Connor could get to George really easily.
I mean, Bisping seemed to be getting under his skin, but I don't think it affects George when it comes to the actual fight.
I don't know. Connor's a different level with his mouth, so.
That's true.
Who knows?
So, I mean, again, I don't think we're going to see George fighting this year, if I had to guess. I know I gave Dana White odds at the beginning of the year, and he said he would take George. I think it was at, like, plus 250. I gave him that George would fight again, or plus 200 that George would fight this year, and he took those odds. And, I mean, again, that's an underdog's odds, so that doesn't mean he's necessarily confident. But, you know, at the same time, if he's willing to take those odds, he at least thinks there's a chance of George fighting again. Based on that interview, I think it's a tough sell at this point. And the other problem with George is he's, I think, 36 now.
Yeah, he's getting up there.
Yeah, he's Bronstedter age at this point.
Okay.
I think he's a little bit older than me, actually. I think he's either a couple months younger than me or a couple months older than me. I can't remember.
All right.
I'd have to look it up. But, you know, I'm nowhere near. I'm past my prime in terms of fight. I'm sorry, everybody who's interested in seeing me come back. But, you know.
Yeah, but you didn't. I don't know. Your body doesn't have the mileage.
I can cut down the bantam weight and
on that Ferrari. Let's get that Ferrari on the track.
More of a jalopy. So, GSP. Again, I just don't see him coming back this year. I don't see there being a fight that seems to interest him enough.
I think after that interview, I'm with you. I can't see it, which is upsetting a little bit because he had that momentum. But I think his priority is his health, and which it should be. I mean, more than his stomach. Like, hopefully he didn't take too much brain trauma throughout his career, and hopefully he's good. But that's number one.
Yeah, the Askren fight I think would be cool. I think it would be fun to see. Well, we're on the topic of Askren. Why don't we throw to that interview? We'll listen to Ben Askren, and he'll give his take on what George St. Pierre had to say this week on the MMA Hour. I know typically we don't usually have a guest on this early in the show, but we'll make an exception. We also don't usually have non-UFC fighters on the show, so lots of exceptions being made here off the top. And we're joined now by the funky one himself, Ben Askren.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's time to introduce this week's guest.
All right, the TSN MMA show is blessed with a little bit of Funkamania today. The man who I think, for my money, is the best fighter to never fight in the UFC. No disrespect to Fedor, but we don't know what was going on back in the old Pride days. I do know that Ben is clean. You know, he's a wrestler. Wrestlers tend to play by the rules. You know, you watch your weight. You see where you're at every day. And I'm happy to have him on the show today. Ben, how are you?
I'm doing really well today. Got a house full of kids that are trying to stalk me, but I'm going to run away from them. I'm retired, you know, I'm kind of in a semi-retirement here. It's going really well. And I'm having a great day.
That's good, man. Yeah, you know, retirement is something that a lot of people can't say that they're doing it at age 33. But I'm guessing when you say retirement, you mean retirement from the world of MMA. I've been seeing a lot of rumblings about you potentially being the coach of the Wisconsin Badgers next year.
Yeah, all of those things are true. So that's another exciting set of developments that's happening. Obviously, my brother and I also run through wrestling academies with our high school coach and one of our other friends in Wisconsin, and that's going really well, and we're having a lot of fun doing that. So a lot of exciting things in my life right now.
Well, we're a Canadian-based podcast, so I think you know what I want to ask you, which is the comments made by George St. Pierre. I'm sure you heard the entire interview with him. Based on what he said, is there still something there that you're pursuing? Are you looking to fight George St. Pierre, or do you think that the ship has sailed?
No, I don't think the ship has sailed at all. I think there's a few more bridges that we may have to cross to make it happen. But, you know, obviously in the interview he showed a high level of respect for me. And he said that not enough people know who I am or whatever. But, you know, I think in due time situations can change, and maybe that's a fight that we both can make happen.
You mentioned the respect level. I mean, some people have always said, you know, who's Ben Askren fought? If you do look at the last fight that Douglas Lima had in Bellator against Rory McDonald, who many people think might be the best welterweight in the world today, you look at his face after that Lima fight and your face after the Lima fight, and, I mean, really, that tells the whole story.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, Douglas Lima had a very good chance to win that fight. You know, he failed to get up in that fifth round, which was where he had Rory hurt so bad. So I don't know how he didn't smell the blood and the water on that one and try to go for the kill. But, to, you know, to give respect to Rory, he did what he needed to win, even though he was badly injured. I said this over and over and over again, people give UFC fighters way too much credit, and they always put other fighters down. And if you look throughout the course of history, whether it was the WEC fighters that came in, the Strikeforce fighters that came in, wherever there's been a league who's merged with the UFC and everyone views the other league as substandard, let's take Strikeforce, for example. Strikeforce fighters are viewed as next tier to UFC. But look how many of them won UFC titles. And we're not talking 5 years later. We're talking within short order. Misha won one. Ronda won one. Tyron won one. Luke Rockhold won it. Fabricio Verdum won it. Daniel Cormier won it. So we had almost all of the upper weights, and Strikeforce didn't contend the lower weights. Almost all of the upper weights were champions within short order, came from Strikeforce. And so this notion that the best guys fight in the UFC, it's not totally true. Maybe they have the highest number of really high-level guys, but the fact that their guys are just better than the UFC has been proven to be totally false in the course of history.
And let's not forget Robbie Lawler as well, who really elevated his career.
Robbie Lawler, yeah, forgot him.
So before we go any further, Ben, this is the question that I have for you. Just for the sake of clarification, are you currently technically a free agent?
Yeah.
What's the hesitation?
obviously I'm probably still under a matching period of some sort, so not a total free agent, but yeah.
And you still have a role with 1FC, correct? You know, like more of an administrative role?
Yes.
All right, well, but that probably wouldn't be an impediment. You mentioned earlier that there were some bridges to cross. What are some of those bridges?
I'm going to pass on that question for now. You guys will see when it becomes more evident. I'm working on some stuff, and you guys will see.
All right. Well, one thing George said is if you got into the UFC, showcased your skills, made your name a little bit better, it could pique his interest. Hypothetically, your phone rings. It's Sean Shelby, Mick Maynard, Dana White, whoever. They say, let's let bygones be bygones. We want to offer you a 4-fight UFC contract. We want you to fight Kamaru Usman, and then after that, you can fight whoever the top contender is if you win that fight. Does that appeal to you at all?
No, I made a statement. I said, I'm retiring unless one condition is met, and that's I get to fight the best guy in the world. And I'm not going to back down from that statement. So, you know, if that never comes, I had a great career. I'm happy in retirement doing what I'm doing now. And so, no, I'm not going to back down on that. I'm not going to change or cater to whatever anyone else wants. I mean, we just saw some jabroni girl get thrown in for a UFC title fight. And she was like 2-3 in her last 5 fights at a lighter weight class. So, I don't see the need for something like that to happen. If I get to fight the best guy in the world, I'll come back. And if I don't, then that's fine.
You keep referring to GSP as the best guy in the world. Tyron Woodley's a good friend of yours. He calls himself the greatest welterweight of all time. Do you have any interest in fighting Tyron? I mean, I would imagine that's out of the question.
I have no interest in fighting Tyron.
Do you still believe that GSP is the best fighter on the planet? Or are you just talking about kind of his resume, that over time he's proven to be one of the best?
So I always say, you know, if people, if there was a one, if Tyron's one, I think GSP's 1A. You know, I don't think people would put GSP below Tyron. I think it'd be more of a parallel draw at this point in time. And I think Tyron thinks he would beat GSP also. And if he gets the opportunity,
I'll be happy for him.
How much does legacy matter to you? I mean, you made a ton of money. You've beaten all the best welterweights outside of the UFC that were offered to you. I mean, would you be happily retired if you never fought again?
Yes.
And I guess that's why you did retire.
Yes, absolutely.
Has there been an opportunity for you to mend fences with the UFC? I mean, Tyron vouches for you. Joe Rogan interviewed you. He wants to see you in the UFC. I'm guessing you're not going to come begging for forgiveness for the things you've said about Dana White over the years.
Why would I beg for forgiveness?
Yeah.
I didn't do anything wrong.
Yeah.
I very clearly outlined on the Joe Rogan show how underhanded they were, how sneaky they were. And so I don't have anything to apologize for. I will not. I mean, there's not even I will not apologize. I don't even know what I would apologize for because there's nothing to apologize for.
Has there been any sort of olive branch extended on their end? Has there been any contact between you? No, nothing at all.
None.
Do you think there ever will be?
No.
No. So you're confident there's very little chance that you end up fighting in the UFC?
Yeah.
All right, well, we can put two and two together here that, you know, when it comes to the bridges to cross, it's more on GSP's end than yours.
No, I don't think you're putting it. I don't think you're doing the math right, but you'll figure it out sometime.
Okay, I'll carry a couple ones. We'll figure it out down the line. UFC 225 in Chicago. Do you expect CM Punk's going to be on that card, and will you be cornering him if he is on that fight whenever he does fight again in the UFC?
No, I don't really train MMA anymore. I don't really coach too much. There are a couple guys that I still help a little bit, but no, I'm not coaching MMA anymore.
So you're not really actively in the gym at Rufus Sport much?
I am not, no.
You're working, I guess, on your academies and all of that.
Yep, just wrestling right now.
All right, and finally, before we let you go, GSP, he did acknowledge that he called you a top three welterweight in the world. But that not enough people knew who you were. Do you agree with that assessment? Do you think that, you know, you need to put yourself out there a little bit more, even in retirement?
I don't know. Frankly, you know, the way GSP is, I figured the guy's made enough money. The guy's had enough fame. At some point, and I've made a lot less money than GSP. I've had a lot less fame than GSP. And at this point in my career, I'm saying I only want to fight the best people because I want to test myself. And I wish GSP would think the same thing. And I thought he was a great sportsman. So for him, with as much money, as much fame as he has, getting more money and getting more fame should become fairly irrelevant in your life. When you have enough money, you can kind of just say, I would like to do things because I would like to do them, not because I'm driven strictly by making a couple more zeros.
Yeah, it was kind of interesting because he said money wasn't the motivating factor. His legacy was the motivating factor. He even went as far as saying, I'm not even that interested in fighting Conor McGregor, the fight that everybody seems to want. So what is it? Do you think that George St. Pierre does want? It seems like there has to be a lot of, you know, things that have to happen in order for him to come back.
Yeah, so that's exactly there. He's contradicting himself. And, you know, when you say something like, I only care about my legacy. GSP's made many, many millions, and if he hasn't been smart to save them, a few more million ain't going to help him that much. And that's what most athletes have to realize. And I didn't make nearly as much money as GSP, but I realized from my early days growing up, and I said this many times now, is that most athletes stay too long and most athletes spend too much money. And it doesn't matter how much money you make if you don't understand how to save it correctly. Mike Tyson, perfect example. A guy made $4 million, still didn't end up with anything. And so for GSP, if he wants to say it's all about his legacy, I'm the guy he has to fight if he wants to grow that legacy, because I'm the person people are pointing at saying that is the guy that could beat GSP.
I'm sure before all of your fights, you've envisioned how they would go in your head. How do you envision a fight with GSP going?
Well, I think the reason that I can give GSP fits is if you've watched any GSP fight in the last, more than 5 years, probably 7 years, because he was retired for, I think, 3 to 4 years there, he relies heavily on the takedowns. And I don't think that will be the case with me. If somehow he does get a takedown on me, he won't be able to keep me down. You know, my background is folk-style wrestling, which is not only takedowns, but it's also about getting up and keeping people down. And so I think I will be able to control positionally the battles. I think I will be able to wear them out, and I think I will be able to stay on top long enough to do enough damage to win and or finish the fight.
Did you think it was insulting that he said that he wanted to see you win a couple fights in the UFC before that fight would interest him?
No, but I think he should stop contradicting himself and say if he wants to do it about legacy. And if he says he knows I'm top three, which we're both, though that's a statement he made. I didn't make that statement. GSP said that. Then he knows I'm funny good enough to fight him. And so let's just make it happen.
And finally, with Tyron, as from an outsider's perspective that watches fights, who do you think is the biggest challenge for him right now in the UFC, be it welterweight or any of these other interesting fights that have been thrown around, you know, with his name?
I don't know. I haven't thought about that. I think Tyron's clearly the best UFC welterweight, and I don't envision him losing anytime soon.
All right, Ben. Well, can't thank you enough for your time. From a personal standpoint, I think you versus GSP would be one heck of a fight. It's certainly one that I would want to watch, and one, you know, we've never seen George St. Pierre get dominated in the wrestling department or really fight very high-level wrestlers, unless there's somebody that I'm forgetting off the top of my head.
Yeah, I agree.
All right, Ben, thanks for your time.
Have a good day.
Very interesting words from Ben Askren. You know, Ben makes an interesting point. He thinks that if it's all about legacy for George, he thinks that he's the guy that will help seal George's legacy as the guy. That being said, again, I still sort of agree with George that there aren't enough people who know who Ben Askren is from a mainstream UFC fan perspective.
Yeah, it doesn't make sense. If you're a hardcore fan and you've been watching MMA, sure, you can make the fight and it makes sense. But for George, it's not worth it. It made total sense. I have to side with George here because why are you going to put it on the line? There's way too much at stake, and Askren's too good to want to put that on the line. It's not enough of a win for him. So
I would love to see what would happen in that fight, though. Just from an X's and O's standpoint, I have no clue what would happen in that fight. Usually in my head, I can picture what's going on. I have a lot of trouble picturing Ben getting George down. I have a lot of trouble picturing George getting Ben down. And then I think it becomes a striking match where George would have the advantage. But then again, if you're careless with your striking with a folk-style wrestler like Ben Askren, you're going to end up on your back.
Yeah,
and if you end up on your back with Ben Askren on top of you, it's very difficult to get up.
Yeah, but also George St. Pierre. Like, I mean, he's a freak compared to who he's fought. And I think George's jab will be really key, his ability to close distance from the outside. I mean, I still side with George, but man, it's too difficult.
Well, the other interesting part was that Ben thinks that there's no chance he'll ever fight in the UFC. He says they haven't reached out to him. He's not on good terms with them, and he doesn't think that they're gonna ever reach out to him. And he's also really not interested in coming back unless it's to fight George. He doesn't want to take tune-up fights or anything, or a fight to put himself on the map. He says that there's a lot of I guess, barriers to cross in order for a fight with GSP to happen, and then refused to elaborate on that. So he goes, I don't really want to speak on that right now. I was like, well,
and
okay.
And he doesn't want to apologize. And he's like, for what? I don't know what I'm apologizing for. Yeah. But sometimes, I don't know, for him, it might be better to apologize for nothing and get back on and just to do something, because I think there's always going to be that, you know, asterisk beside his name.
I don't think he cares, though. I honestly don't think he cares. Okay. I think he's made a lot of money. He's comfortable. He's got his wrestling academies now.
Where would he have made his money?
ONE FC paid him a lot of money. ONE Championship, rather.
Okay.
Paid him a lot of money. They paid him, from what I understand, it was like something like $300,000 a fight.
Okay.
It's like he was making good money there. And he also still has a role with them, an advisory role with them that I'm sure he's getting paid for. He's got three successful wrestling schools out in Wisconsin.
Beautiful.
And apparently he's in the mix for the Wisconsin Badgers wrestling coach job. So Ben's got a lot going for him. He doesn't need to come out of retirement, and I get why George St. Pierre would entice him, but he also said there's really no other fight that interests him. So I think he's going to be sitting around for some time waiting for that fight.
He's definitely one of the more intelligent in the sport. Even hearing him with Rogan, he's intelligent. Like, he's very smart. Like, he barely
got hit.
Yeah, like he's just really, you know, he can put his words together well, and he's got a strong mind. Man, he's good for the sport, and I think he's a good role model in that, hey, you can do things within your sport, but you got to build it so you have an option outside of the sport. And I know even George said it in his interview, like, guys have to start showing the path. Stop being the guy that just sits there. I'll fight anybody. I mean, you have to start looking like George and Askren. I think they're good role models and examples.
Yeah, and Askren was also saying that one thing he always says to athletes that are coming up is save your money. Figure out,
absolutely.
Imagine that this is your last fight. You've got to save money. You've got to figure out what to do with it and how you're going to continue, you know, with your life afterwards.
Yeah.
And he says a lot of athletes just blow their money.
Yeah, it's easy when you have it all and you're making, you know, like in the UFC, even a smaller guy building up the show, you get 50 G's thrown in your pocket. Like, hey, this is pretty good.
And you get a bonus that you didn't expect to get.
Yeah, you didn't get to get. And then you want to buy, you know, a nice Rolex, and then you need a new car. And then, hey,
all of a sudden in training, you hurt your knee, and then you need surgery. You're out for a year. That 50 G's did nothing for you.
Yeah, money's easy to spend when you have it in your account.
Yep.
But when you don't have it in your account and you're struggling, you got to remember that, too. That's what you got to look back on. So UFC 222, I thought, was a really cool card in hindsight. Like, when you looked at it on paper, you thought, well, there's not a whole lot that sticks out here. But then suddenly you've got a card where a lot of the future players in the UFC are built up. A lot of interesting things happen during the fight. A newcomer comes in and beats like a ranked lightweight in 42 seconds. Just a lot to digest from this card. I think we can get past the prelims. You know, Mike Pyle unfortunately has to retire. I thought that Cody Stamann and Brian Caraway was a fun fight, but like a good back and forth fight in terms of from a technical standpoint. CB Dolloway versus Hector Lombard ends in controversy. Some punches after the bell. Hector Lombard gets DQ'd. Do you agree with that decision?
I agree with the DQ. I mean, how many fights has Hector Lombard been in? It's questionable, but what happened, you have to give the DQ. I mean, I still think it was, if you want to call one shot after the bell, okay. The fact that, I know it, everyone's going to say, well, you counter a kick and you want to counter in ones and twos and follow up on it, but that was really late, and I'm okay with a DQ call.
I'll say this. I'm no fan of Hector Lombard, but I think that was complete BS. I think that if you watch the replay, the ref is nowhere near these guys when the hands clap. He starts, for the 10-second warning, he starts getting a little bit closer. Bell goes, he's nowhere to be found. I mean, he says stop, 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 but when you're throwing a combo, even if it's after the bell, like it's on the ref to get in there. If you remember back at UFC 208, Jermaine Durandamay versus Holly Holm. Durandamay dropped Holm with a shot after the bell, and the ref wasn't there, and Durandamay ends up winning that decision, a unanimous decision against Holm, probably because of those two end of round shots that she delivered to Holm. Now Holm wasn't knocked out like Dolloway was. There's no way Dolloway should have continued that fight, but I think that Hector Lombard should appeal, and I hope he wins the appeal because I think it sets a bad precedent if it's the ref not getting in there. Now I think Mark Smith is a great referee. The ref of that fight. I just think he had a judgment lapse, or he just was not in the moment at that particular moment in time. Refereeing is a very difficult job, but you need to be between those two fighters when the bell goes. If you put your hand in between and say, stop, stop, the onus is not on the fighter to stop doing what he's doing. You need to get them separated.
Yeah,
that's your job.
It is a reffing fault. Big John McCarthy said that, you know, once he hears the 10-second, when there's about 5 seconds left, the referee does have to close in, stay near.
Watch the replay.
Get on a 90-degree angle so he can kind of step in right away and stop the fight. I mean, yes, it's a reffing fault, but it's so late. It was that late.
In real time, it was not that late.
We can say that, you know, oh, he didn't hear the bell. I mean, out of how many UFC fights do you see where if the last 10 seconds,
there were also
you
six
go.
People in the arena. Yeah. There was barely anybody there.
Like, you go. You have to go as hard as you can last 10 seconds. And you usually know, but I think it was late.
Oh, it was for sure late.
Whether
I mean,
it was
no
a no
was
contest
late.
Or whether it was a DQ.
It's certainly not a knockout victory for Lombard.
Definitely not.
But I think it should have for sure been a no contest.
Yeah.
I just don't see how you disqualify a guy when the ref doesn't do his job.
I mean, the big criticism is it's two punches. If one after,
but it was a
maybe.
Combo.
It was a 1-2.
It was a 1-2 combo.
But come on. I don't know.
I'm not defending Lombard. Believe me. I think Lombard was doing... I mean, I can't definitively say he did it on purpose.
No,
but
I'm not going to say it's on purpose.
It looked like he's a little bit liable for what happened, but the ref needs to be in there. They just have to.
It's 100% the referee's fault.
His hand wasn't even, like when he said stop, near. Stop, his hand wasn't even near them.
Yeah, but there's been a million fights. Hector Lombard's fought a million times. And you know what? He's stopped every time.
So has Jermaine Durandamay.
Yeah, but I mean, I know.
I mean, if you think of her Muay Thai career.
Like, I've had a fighter with the same situation where... all of a sudden, he was going into like a mid-lunging hook, and the ref said stop. Even the ref even put the hand out, and he still hit the guy. It was just after, and he knocked the guy out really badly, which kind of sucked.
Was this in Glory?
No, this was like a local show.
Okay.
And my point was like, it was at least a single shot mid.
Yeah,
this was
right.
Kick, beep, and then doom, doom. Like it was... I don't know. Two shots made it a little. If it was a single right hand after, like it was a kick right hand right after counter, I would be a little bit more like, okay, it was
okay,
mid.
But what does the ref say at the beginning of the fight? Defend yourself at all times.
Yeah.
But like, Dolloway needs to defend himself and the ref needs to get in there. Like
you can't
blame Lombard.
No, you can't fully blame him, but you do have to, someone has to be responsible. If you're driving and it's slippery and you jam your brakes and someone hits you from behind, well, you may have jammed your brakes in the front because someone stopped or something came ahead of you, but if that person hits you from behind, that person's responsible for hitting you,
mm-hmm, yeah.
right? Because you're following too close, right? So, I mean, there's got to – referee's fault. But I'm okay with the DQ. It was a little too much for me, but I would be okay with a no contest as well.
Yeah, well, we'll see what happens at the during the appeal process. But I kind of feel for Hector Lombard because he went from making like $500,000 a fight or something along those lines. Now he's making 62 and 62.
Yeah, he was signed as one of the biggest prospects out of Bellator.
And
right?
now he probably scores what is a legitimate knockout. I mean, you don't want to call it a win, but it's considered a loss now, and they could cut him. Like, he's lost, what, four in a row or something along those lines? He's won one of his last six, something, if I recall. So, I don't know. I personally just think it was a no contest. Like I don't really care if they let Lombard go or whatever. That's their decision, but, you know, based on the result. But I just think that he's not getting a fair shake. That's
like,
just my
like
my
I even questioned too. Remember with John Jones and Matt Hamill with the you know
the 12-6
elbow. I was just like, it just sucks, you know. Like it's one of those situations where like it's a loss on your record.
Has there been a stoppage? Not a stoppage, but like a stoppage in the action from a 12-6 elbow any time since then. Like,
no, I don't think so.
I don't think I can think of
a
single one.
No, I can't even see it, yeah.
There was no warning. I mean, that was Mazzucati, who was
a terrible
referee.
Mean, I question a lot of the calls, but I mean, I don't know. It's such a tough call, and I mean, it's all into your interpretation. Yeah. If you like Hector Lombard, hey, it was a fair shot. If you're a CB Dalloway fan. The other thing with Dalloway, if you kick and if he heard the bell, this is the issue. If he heard the bell, again, like you said, protect yourself at all times. He probably dropped his hands more than he usually would because the round was over, and then all of a sudden gets caught, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, but it's a good.
Ref's got to be in there.
Yeah.
Ref's just got to be. That's just my opinion. Ref's got to be in there. So the prelims had some really interesting fights. On top of that, Dodson versus Munoz, I thought was a very good fight. I thought that I actually scored it for Munoz. I was in the strong minority of people that scored it for Munoz. But. And I actually thought, I had picked Dodson to win that fight. I just thought that Dodson's strategy was a little bit off and that Munoz was really pushing the pace.
There's been a lot of controversy with Dodson and not wanting to go for finishes. Like, he just seems really happy with winning on decisions and just doing just enough to what he has to do.
Yeah.
So, I know.
And you're not going to move up the ranks.
In that way.
Yeah, when you're doing that.
And, I mean, he's really, I think this was one of his last fights on his contract, too. And
it was the last fight on his contract.
Yeah, and he was asked, like, he's like, I want to be here.
Yeah.
So, I mean, so a lot of the controversy was, show that you want to be here, perform, entertain a little bit more. But if you're winning and you're dominant, you can be like GSP, right?
Yeah.
And dominate that way, but I don't think Dodson's at that level.
I mean, Dodson probably looks at the bantamweight division, sees that the champion is TJ Dalloway, a guy that he beat, and thinks that, you know, that should be what his goal is.
Dillashaw.
What did I say?
Dalloway.
TJ Dalloway.
Yeah.
I guess
CB Dalloway.
Oh, yeah, and
I do it all the
TJ
time.
TJ Dillashaw. Yeah, I've taken too many shots to the head, Joe.
Yeah. Okay, that Ferrari line, I mean, maybe we should pull you back. We're not getting you in.
So Alexander Hernandez, newcomer to the UFC, takes the fight on very short notice against a ranked guy, Benil Dariush, and cleans his clock 42 seconds in very impressive fashion, the kid from San Antonio. The thing that bothers me about this is that he's now ranked 13th in the lightweight division, the deepest division in the UFC. You got a guy like James Vick who needed to become 8-1 in lightweight to get ranked. This kid comes in, 2 weeks notice, he's ranked now. But again, the rankings, we cannot get me started because I just will get
this
too fired up.
This is a touchy subject with you. Yeah. We gotta stop.
But I do not want to take anything away from the win of Alexander Hernandez because he looked absolutely fantastic in that fight. He had no fear of Benil Dariush.
Yeah, that shot, that left hand, the way he was switching stances, his comfort in the ring, he looked incredible. I think he's one of the big stars from the event. I mean, every time you look and you read all the MMA media, he's the guy. He's all over Reddit. He's all on MMA fighting. So I think he's that guy that came out like we saw with Israel Adesanya. He's getting all that hype now. So, I mean, I guess they're trying to bump him up to try to get him some big profile fights because, man, he looked good.
And there are a lot of those people. Like, there are a lot of people that came out of this card that deserve to get discussed. And he's certainly among them, a younger guy. Puts himself on the map, and good for him. Yeah. Mackenzie Dern, Ashley Yoder. Dern's striking is a major work in progress, would you say?
Yeah, definitely. She's got some work to do. But yeah, I mean, she was okay. What did you take from her? Do you think the hype was there for her? She has it?
Well, the fight actually went exactly how I thought it would go. If you watch my, I did a Periscope video, Joe. Look at me getting into social media before the event. They did a breakdown of the entire card from the prelims onto the main card. And I said, I think this is going to be a mostly stand-up affair and that Dern is going to win a pretty close decision. And that's what happened. I thought that the grappling would kind of offset a little bit. I know that Dern is obviously way more high level than Ashley Yoder, but I also knew that Yoder would be able to stuff takedowns and even could be somewhat crafty and try to get Dern's back or try to do something. I mean, that never ended up happening. And I think probably the smart move is to not try to take Dern's back, because if you get into sort of any sort of grappling exchange with Dern, you're in big trouble. Yoder floored her in the second round. Yoder clearly won the second round. The lone card for Ashley Yoder was by Adelaide Bird, so you may as well just throw it out the window as baloney.
Yep.
I thought that Dern clearly won the first and third round. And definitely a work in progress. Her wrestling needs work. She said that to me on last week's show when I asked her about it. She said that her wrestling is a big work in progress. She says she feels like she's got good power in her striking, and it did appear that way. When she landed, she did have power behind those punches, mm-hmm. but the technique looks like it needs a lot of fine-tuning.
Oh, yeah. She needs work.
She needs to come to Asian
Joe
court.
Kickboxing,
yeah, to Bazooka Joe kickboxing and get some reps.
See, I think with her, though, I mean, a lot of good jiu-jitsu and wrestlers, or if any specialist that you come in to the UFC with, you can't over forget about it. You have to do what makes you so successful. So for McKenzie to over strike could affect her game and totally change her strategy. So I think with the right team's got to develop her properly, because if she over strikes and then she's focusing too much on that, where her priorities got to get girls and, you know, be choking them out as quickly as she can.
And she needs to also get the right matchups. Like, I think that Yoder was a very good matchup. If she fights somebody who has good striking, she's in trouble. Like, she's just, her striking is just not there. And striking defense, especially, is what needs work. She keeps her chin way up when she's striking, throws big looping punches, and Yoder exposed that in the second round.
Yeah, I think UFC is pretty good with developing their athletes, and they're doing a better job than kickboxing. The problem with kickboxing is we don't have as many talented roster as, like, the UFC. So you have an opportunity to build. With kickboxing, we never had that chance. When I was fighting my sixth pro fight, I fought someone with 90 fights, right? We don't have that. So, I mean, the UFC is, I believe, in my opinion anyways, they're building these guys at a good rate.
Yeah, and I think that...
guys as in general, but...
And an opponent that I think would be a good fit for McKenzie in her next fight is Marina Moroz. She was recently ranked. Her striking doesn't have a whole lot of power behind it. Most, you know, her best path to victory is probably a submission, and against Dern, that's not going to, you know, it's not going to fly.
Yeah.
So, you know, and she's also kind of a sloppy striker. So I think that would be a solid matchup. I mean, I think that Moroz would have a pretty big reach advantage in that fight, but, you know, test her a little bit. At the same time, it's not exactly the toughest matchup, and that might be the way to go.
Yeah, I agree. You got to give her something right. That's the key. Don't just because of her jiu-jitsu, you know, accomplishments, we got to keep her and grow her properly.
Yeah, and there was a graphic that the UFC put up that's like, who do you want her to fight next? And I think two of the people that I recognized were like JJ Aldrich and Danielle Taylor. And I was thinking, like, those would be really bad matchups, like, just because their bread and butter is striking.
Yeah.
And I mean, I don't think they're world beaters. I don't think that they're, you know, ranked opponents. But at the same time, you just need to find good stylistic matchups that make sense for
Dern. But even a good striker whose ground is not great,
that's not a bad fight,
right? I mean, you can take those matchups really well. Yeah. I mean, as a striker, you put me in the ring, the worst matchup you're going to give me is a wrestler, right? So, I mean, for her, the best matchup for a wrestler would be a striker, because they have no idea what to do. You might have to take a shot or two, but then once you grab, the fight's over.
There's not a whole lot of big power there.
Yeah.
But, yeah, that's true. I mean, that could be the case. And Dern wants to fight again in May at UFC 224 in Brazil. Another guy that wants to fight in UFC 224 in Brazil is Darren Till, who called that Rafael dos Anjos for fighting in Brazil. I mean, Darren Till knows how to speak Portuguese. He trained there for a long time.
He had technical videos in Portuguese, too. With Irish.
Yeah, he did with the accent.
But I mean, he's a very technical guy. I don't know why they're not using him. Do you know what the...
Till?
Yeah.
Well, he recently did an interview with my friend and colleague Jim Edwards, and said that he had something was going on, some sort of injury or illness was sidelining him. I think it was an illness was sidelining him.
Okay.
So, you know, that's why he's not fighting at this London card in 2 weeks. He wasn't able to. And then we go to the main card. So all these articles are kind of coming out about Sean O'Malley, Ortega, and, you know, Hernandez is mentioned in some, and so is Dern, obviously. Very little discussion about Ketlin Vieira, who I thought was extremely dominant against Kat Zingano. She's undefeated. She's 26. She looks like she's getting better and better. She looks like almost Amanda Nunes light. And I think that she deserves major props for how she handled Kat Zingano, because I thought that was a dominant performance despite the weird split decision.
Yeah, and it wrecked things for Kat Zingano, who had plans to fight
Cyborg.
Yeah. So that kind of derailed her. But maybe nobody wants to fight Cyborg, and you know, Kat will still get to fight. But Vieira's tough. 9-0. You have to, you know, you got to be thinking of her as one of the top contenders.
I think she's the number one contender.
You know,
right,
she's
now
ranked number four right now. So, but yeah, I have to agree with you.
I just don't like. I mean, if you look at who the top three are ahead of her, you've got Holly Holm, you've got Raquel Pennington, and you've got Juliana Pena. Pena had a baby a month and a half ago. She's not active. She hasn't fought since UFC 200. So she's not active right now. How you don't put her above Pena is absurd to me. Holm is 1-4 in her last five, and she's the number one contender, which to me seems off. And then at number two, you've got Raquel Pennington, who I think is worthy of a title shot. But at the same time, she hasn't fought since she beat Misha Tate at UFC 205. And I just don't think her resume is quite as good as Ketlin Vieira's, coming off back-to-back wins against McMahon and Zingano, two of the tougher girls in the division.
So who do you want to see her fight? What do you think the next logical fight?
To me, I think you do Ketlin Vieira versus Holly Holm if Holm is going to go back to bantamweight and not fight at featherweight. I think that's the fight to make, because then you can really cement Vieira as the top contender, or you can build Holly Holm back up, because Holly Holm beats an undefeated fighter. So I think that's the fight to make.
And especially with Amanda Nunes wanting to go and fight Cyborg, too.
Yes. And then the other thing is,
that'll develop the number one contender.
Yeah. Another thing is that UFC 224, if you're going to have Cyborg and Nunes fight, which is kind of rumored now, Dana White was saying he's thinking of pulling Pennington from that rumored match and putting Cyborg in and having that fight in Brazil, or putting Nunes in and having that fight in Brazil, then maybe you just have Pennington fight Vieira if she's healthy. And I think she is healthy, because, again, I thought it was a pretty dominant performance. And Vieira's from Brazil. It would just make a whole lot of sense.
Yeah, I agree with you.
Yeah, so, you know, I think that she's the person that you should be building up as a future contender, even though it might not sell. But if you can get her to fight Nunes at a future card in Brazil, something along those lines, that would be a good move.
Yeah, and she took Jermaine Durandamine's spot. So, I mean, what about a fight with them?
Durandamine and Vieira?
Yeah.
I think that was actually scheduled at one point. I think that was, that was what was scheduled for this fight, right? That Zingano stepped in. It was either that or, sorry, McMahon, I think, took on Vieira on shorter notice when Durandamine withdrew. Something along those lines. There's some sort of musical chairs going on with those pieces. But, yeah, Vieira versus Durandamine would be interesting, too, because Jermaine hasn't fought since she won the featherweight title and rescinded the title. Or stripped, I guess, with what's
and
the word?
It's a good striking
relinquished
versus
the title.
Yeah, it's a good striking versus, jiu-jitsu style.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I mean, Vieira's a black belt in jiu-jitsu and judo. She's no joke.
Yep.
Arlovski versus Struve. Arlovski has more takedowns in this fight than he had in his entire
career,
UFC career to date beforehand, which was absurd. Stefan Struve has some of the worst fight IQ I've ever seen. I don't know. What did you glean from that?
So the idea that Stefan Struve, being the tallest guy, has zero understanding of distance control.
Never has.
He's too into, like, sitting in close range and striking. That's
why
he was
nailing Arlovski with heavy leg kicks.
Yeah.
I was thinking of you, Joe, watching that fight. I'm like, this guy's nailing Arlovski with these leg kicks, and he's just not doing it anymore.
I don't get it. I don't know. The problem is he's with a team and that prides themselves on pressure fighting. He's with Henry Hooft and the whole
Hard Knocks 365.
The Hard Knocks 365, and they pride themselves, pressure fighter. You know, we're all pressure fighters. I mean, you can't be a pressure fighter. You're 7 feet tall. Like, you need to use your length, your reach. And that's why he got knocked out so much in his career, because he would just stand there with Mark Hunt. You're twice the height of him. Like, you're literally two times the size of Mark Hunt. Use a jab. Use front kicks. One of the most successful kickboxers in the world and strikers was Semi Schilt, one of the tallest to do it. He developed a front kick, a jab. He kept his distance. He moved his head back.
That really should be the blueprint to Semi Schilt.
It should be. Semi Schilt is the blueprint for Stefan Struve. But I don't know. It just drives
me
nuts.
Maybe he can come train with you for free.
That's it. It would be good.
Yeah.
But, I mean, the thing is with their team, they think Henry Hooft is like the guru of kickboxing, right?
Right.
Little do they know.
Well, Struve, it's shocking to me that he's the only guy to defeat Stipe inside the distance, like to beat Stipe, knock him out. It was a long time ago.
Stressful. stressful.
But yeah, it's
especially when guys
hit
low kick.
That was a tough fight to watch.
My big thing, and I'm going to say it 1,000 times, is guys hit the low kick and then they forget about it for some reason. Why do you forget? You're 1, 2, 3, 4 away from it,
yeah,
and then you don't go to
those
it.
Those were heavy leg kicks.
All you got to do is blow on the leg and the guy's done, but you guys need to finish to the leg. It's okay to set things up, but you can use the strike to knock people out, TKO them. That's the strategy that should have been there.
Must be annoying for you to watch sometimes.
It drives me nuts.
You've got to come here and watch a card with me one day. I want to pick your brain.
Yeah. We'll set it up.
Sean O'Malley against Andre Tukumtot. Speaking of bad fight IQ, third round, takes down a guy who can't walk. But to Tukumtot's credit.
I heard it.
You saw my tweet?
Yeah, go for it.
Well, he was interviewed by ESPN. And he goes, I don't know what I was thinking either, but you know, I was kind of out of it. I was kind of out on my feet.
That's where I was going.
And
with
I said, like, it's easy for us at home to say that it was a stupid move to take him down, but I hadn't been hit 41 times in the head leading up to that point, right?
No, so, I get it.
So I mean, I think that obviously if he could turn back time, he would just let. I was watching it, and I was like, just let the guy up, let him up. He can't stand. You're blowing it.
But even Rashad Evans with the post fight was like, all you have to do is step back and say, step towards me, and the fight's over.
Yeah,
he can't.
That's it. All he had 2 minutes to do it, to figure it out. And his corner were yelling at him to do it.
I just hope people forget about it one day for his sake.
It's tough because he's 1-3 in the UFC now.
Like he
has a good
really
win over
talented.
Luke Sanders, who's a talented guy, but he could have derailed the Sean O'Malley hype train. Like, he could have been the first guy to beat Sean O'Malley, and Sean O'Malley's a guy that they're really pushing.
That they're hyping.
And Sean O'Malley was destroying him to that point in the fight.
Yeah, I don't get it.
He checked the kick, did a good job, broke his foot, although I believe the x-rays came back negative. But it was to the point where he couldn't walk. He couldn't walk after the fight. Joe interviewed him lying down on the ground, wincing in pain, which I've never seen before.
Yeah, I don't know. Like I said, was he rocked? Maybe. It's for him to know.
Yeah.
We'll never know. But, I mean, I think everyone agrees it was a terrible decision.
Yeah, but again, easy for us to say watching it. I'll give Tukumtot credit because he acknowledged it was dumb, but also said I was rocked early in that fight. Yeah. I didn't really know what was going on.
And
as somebody yourself who's been rocked in a fight, Joe, I'm sure you can understand what that
yes
that's
and
like.
Yes and no, but my natural instincts, you would think, wouldn't do it. But
your natural instincts would be to let someone up in any sort of exchange.
But think about it. You're a striker. Like, Tukumtot's a striker.
Yeah.
You're not a ground guy.
You're
not a ground guy. So, I mean, your natural instinct should be to stay on your feet.
Yeah, and O'Malley was still putting up triangles and stuff despite having, a broken foot.
I'm just like, I don't get it. I think it's hilarious. I think it's going to be really hard for him to brush off, and he seems positive about it, but come on. It's bothering him.
And to me, the shock of shocks, Ortega beating Edgar in the first round with that big elbow followed by the punch. I mean, the elbow, it was a beautiful, beautiful, beautiful combo. And Edgar seemed to be handling him to that point, but Ortega's one of these guys that pulls rabbits out of his hat.
Yeah, that was just beautiful. I don't think I've seen an elbow like that in a long
time.
Beautiful. Nicely hit. And, I mean, a good elbow isn't a lot of people use elbows as knives, like they want to cut you with it. But that elbow was used properly. Nice, deep, nicely timed, perfect spot. Like, it didn't cut him because that's why it hurt him. Like, the elbows that cut you don't hurt as much because they're grazing. These elbows where you step deep and you can connect the way that elbow did, it was just beautiful. Beautifully timed, beautifully executed, like right on. Like, I was super impressed with that.
Yeah, and I tweeted that Ortega was plus 1250 to win by knockout.
Really?
So, yeah, it's pretty good odds. And if you had that, good for you.
And the uppercut, and I'm going to say it, and I know if my guys and my fighters are listening right now, I'm the first one to say it. The uppercut is one of the most underused weapons.
A lot of people are starting to use that lead uppercut, I've noticed.
Any uppercut, any up angle is the shot that you want, especially if you're a striker. You want to have up angles because it's going to make a guy think twice of dipping his head to get on the inside. So beautiful time with a nice small glove. More people need to throw uppercuts.
So does the uppercut open up the leg kick a little bit more? Like, because you're jarring someone's head back, they're looking for something that's coming from
down? Most people like hooks after uppercuts. Mm-hmm. A lot of people like the hook. The uppercut's more of an in-close range shot, so it's not really too good for low kicks. But if you go, the why people don't like to throw them is because they're like, I get caught.
Yeah, sorry, what I mean is, like, if you connect on an uppercut, that probably opens things up for you.
Everything.
Low, yeah.
Everything. I mean, all punches do. This is what people need to do. If you punch the head, the legs are open. Hit the legs. If the focus is on the leg, hit the head. You have to be able to change levels, and that's what makes a good striker. And it pisses me off, too, when you'll see someone, a guy will rock someone, maybe with a right hand. The first thing a fighter is going to do is going to shell up and hold his head. Why are you punching the head? Like, why?
Yeah.
You want to talk about fight IQ?
Yeah, you
got to
hit the body.
Let's talk about real fight IQ. Watch Israel Adesanya fight. When that guy shelled up, what did Israel Adesanya do?
You have his number, by the way?
No.
We should have him on the show one day.
Okay.
I know you guys know each other, and we could figure that out.
Yeah, well, we'll figure it out.
Although the time difference might be an issue since he's in,
New
Zealand.
But the first thing people do is cover their heads. So what does Israel do? He looked off. He took a second of pause, and he even was doing back fists on the guy's body. You have to hit open areas. The leg is an open area. If someone's covering the head, hit the leg. If someone's covering their body, hit the head, then the leg. It drives me nuts. That's the stupidest thing that I think fighters could do.
Do you think we'll see a lot more guys with a high kickboxing pedigree come over to the UFC just because the money's a little bit better?
I think now with Glory doing better and kickboxing really starting to take off, we had over 11,000 people in that Bader fight. We were sold out. Huge. If you would have saw our we have huge walk. I mean, you got to see it. It's something different, especially in Holland and Europe when we have Bader fight. We have an elevated walkway. We have, there was 11,000 people, crazy environment. It's like a UFC environment. So, most people now want to stay with kickboxing because we have
There's an infrastructure and there's consistent fights.
Yeah, there's consistent fights. So now for people like myself, it was a good time. But, guys who... they love kickboxing, but they won't make that Glory level. Those are the guys that will probably start going more. But if you're a high level kickboxer, you're with Glory and you're stuck.
So with Ortega now, he's going to get the next shot at Max Holloway. That's a tough fight to call.
Yeah,
because you see now that Ortega can do stuff on the feet. I have no gauge on that fight. Yeah. Honestly, it's one of those ones where again in my head I'm playing it out and playing it out and. I always see Holloway winning, but then I feel that same way for all of Ortega's fights. I always see people being able to put Ortega away, and they never do.
Yeah.
So that's a fight where when that fight comes out, I'm staying away from that one. Yeah. I don't even want to predict that one.
I listened to an interview with him with, Render Gracie?
Oh, Henner Gracie? Yeah.
Because it's the H, right?
Yeah, Henner Gracie.
So he was saying he strives in those situations in scrambles and messy types of scrappy fights, so... I mean, that's the fight he's going to get with Holloway. So, you count Ortega out. If I had $1,000, I would put $1,000 Edgar would win.
Yeah. Yeah, Edgar
in terms of
my picks on this card, Edgar for me was my strongest lean, if I had to say.
I thought it was going to be another Yair Rodriguez
Same with
style
me.
It. That's exactly what I thought. I thought he was going to outclass and use his skill, but... Man,
I thought
Brian
he would just
Ortega.
Buzz through him. I thought he. I thought he. Even if he took him to the ground, I thought that if he got into side control, he'd have.
Yeah.
I don't know. Yeah. And I didn't even think he'd try to get to the ground.
And what I love about Ortega, I had this big rant with my fighters the other day. If you win, 10 fights, okay, the UFC might not call you. If you win, 7 of them by knockout, the UFC might not call you. But if you have 5 fights. And all of those 5 fights finish the same way. Say it's my right low kick. If I finish all of those fights by the right low kick, now you've created something. You've created a buzz around your style.
Yeah.
You've created something now. So all of a sudden, as soon as I go in a fight, all of a sudden people are they're waiting. The anticipation. They're holding their breath. When's the low kick coming? When's the low kick? Then when you smack it, everybody starts cheering. They're waiting for that moment. Krokop had that with the high kick. So he was able
to
create a career.
And Drew, to an extent, has that.
Yeah, because everyone waits for that moment. So it creates the hype, and you become a more entertaining fighter. So with Ortega, they have, as soon as someone even grabs your neck, the whole place starts going crazy. So he has that, and it's amazing to see how he's built it.
No, it was a long time ago, but Gabriel Gonzaga finishing Krokop with a head kick is one of the craziest things I think I've ever seen in the UFC.
And the way Krokop folded, too.
Yeah.
I think he broke his ankle, too, when he fell, didn't he?
Yeah, something like that. Oh, because he felt like...
He snapped his ankle back. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
That was a long time ago.
It was.
I should go back and watch that. You know what I watched, actually, this week? I watched the CM Punk fight again, but with CM Punk's corner audio.
Okay, and
it was very sad to watch.
See, I've always wanted to do that. There's an actual
if you have Fight Pass, right?
Yeah,
on Fight Pass, on any fight, I wouldn't say any fight because it probably doesn't go that far back. You can click on corner, and you can hear the corner audio for pretty much every fight. Yeah, every fight from the last couple years.
I wanted to create this whole concept. I thought it was a whole new, brand new concept, being like for it would be cool to have the actual fight happening, like on the half, like if you cut a screen in half, yeah. The top would have the actual fight and the bottom would have their corner talking.
Yeah, this has the
so
corner.
You can see
audio.
How the fighter reacts to the talking.
Yeah, but that's what this is basically. It doesn't have, like, you can't see the corner, but you can hear everything the corner said. There's no commentary.
Yeah,
it's just the corner.
Oh, see, I like that. That's I had that idea for a while.
So I watched the CM Punk fight. And, like, the way that I explained it to somebody... Yeah, it's Duke Rufus. And the way that I explained it to somebody was, like, Duke Rufus was coaching... he was telling him all the right things to do.
Yeah.
But it was a guy who had no capability of doing those things.
Duke's really good. He's one of my favorite corners to
watch. Yeah, so listening to Duke, I was like, yeah, that's the right advice, but you've got a guy who's not able to execute it.
Yeah.
And, Duke was also saying, good job, when he's, like, about to get choked out. But, you know, at the same time, like, he's... You know, Punk's listening to him. He's moving.
He's trying.
It was the reason why it was kind of sad is because, you know, CM Punk comes out. You can tell that this really means a lot to him, that this fight means a great deal to him, that he's getting this opportunity.
For sure.
And, I mean, when you watch it, he's out of his element. Like, he's not on the level of Mickey Gall. And I'm sure he would acknowledge that if you asked him that now. Like, if you rewatched that fight, you know, were you at the level
Mickey
of Mickey
Gall's
Gall?
Good.
Mickey Gall's a good fighter.
Yeah.
Mickey Gall beat Sage Northcutt, who was undefeated
good.
At lightweight.
Yeah.
But, like, you could just tell that, like, there wasn't much he could do about it.
Yeah.
And as much as the corner was trying to get him to do it, and the corner, again, Rufus was giving him good advice.
Yeah.
It was just a guy that was not able to implement that advice against a guy who was a much higher level grappler than him.
Yeah. Gall's big.
Kinda sad.
He's awkward. He's a little strong. But
and you hear Gall afterwards be like, yeah, you know, I really respect him for fighting and blah, blah. You know, you could hear him talking.
Sure, as you should.
They cut it off at a certain point after the fight where they cut the audio.
Yeah.
But you could hear it pretty, like, probably a good 30, 40 seconds after the fight. You could hear, you know, great job, good job, champ. You know, like Rufus saying that to Gall and all that stuff.
I'm going to listen to
but
some
fights. It's worth watching. I mean, that's why where you got that whole head movement thing from Edmund. Where you could hear the Edmund corner with Rousey against Nunes.
Saying, watch the head
movement. No, he's like, head movement, head movement, head movement.
And then she's
like, just destroys her.
Yeah.
And he's like, no, no. It was just bad coaching.
Yeah,
and that's
yeah.
why people kind of rip on Edmund and you say that Ronda probably should have gone outside of that, you know, the Glendale Fight Club.
Yeah.
But
did you hear CM Punk with the rumors with Mayweather could be the match?
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know.
It makes sense.
It's not very circus,
yeah.
But I would watch it. I mean, like,
because
it's a boxer versus a pro wrestler in MMA, which is crazy to think about.
It would probably
have to be at a catch weight of some sort.
Yeah,
because
it's a huge
Mayweather
difference.
Walks around at like 150 pounds.
Yeah.
Punk walks around probably at 185, 190 something. I've seen CM Punk in person. He's a tall guy. He's a pretty big guy.
So funny.
And I've seen Mayweather in person, and Mayweather's shorter than I am.
Yeah. I can't see it happening, but I'd be into it.
Yeah.
It makes sense. Like
Mayweather's my size, which is pretty crazy.
Anyone in the UFC level. You can't really put anyone that's UFC potential against CM Punk. Who can you put?
You also can't put anybody who's UFC potential
against Mayweather. Yeah,
so it makes sense. I keep saying Artem Lobov would be interesting because Lobov would probably stand and trade with him.
Yeah, but
again,
still,
you're talking as soon as someone kicks the legs of
totally
Mayweather,
different.
It's a different ball game.
Yeah, so I don't know. I don't think it'll happen, but I would like to. It makes sense.
It would just be so much fun to watch.
Yeah,
but.
Does it make sense?
Does it hurt the legitimacy of the sport, though, would you say? Because personally,
really.
I don't think it does.
But I could see
the perspective of somebody who does think it does.
Yeah, I can see it, too.
Personally, there's no fight
to
me that ruins the legitimacy of the sport because I don't think of the UFC as a sport. And that's not to say that mixed martial arts is not a sport. Mixed martial arts is a sport.
Yeah.
But the UFC is a promoter of the sport.
Yeah.
They're a promotion. They're a business. And people need to understand that and wrap their head around that. And that's not a criticism of the UFC.
No.
It's actually a compliment to the UFC because I buy into the fact that they need to put on fights that will make them money because that is their bottom line.
But fighting is something that it's in us. I mean, you go to the bar, you can get into a fight, and everyone's going to sit there and watch. They're not technical. They don't know what they're doing. But, hey, everyone's going to get their phone out and watch this fight. No one cares. All of a sudden now, they have stuff called agency wars. People who work in offices all day go and fight someone from another office, you know? I mean, people, whether you're good at fighting, not, whether you've fought before or not, people will watch a fight. If you walk down the street and there's a fight, you're not just going to walk by it. You're going to be world-starring with your phone.
Here's the million-dollar question, though, and you're going to like this question because I don't think that there's a right or wrong answer. UFC 226, Cormier versus Stipe, by the heavyweight champion versus the light heavyweight champion.
Yeah.
If you have Mayweather versus Punk, you headline with that, no?
Yes.
I mean, you headline with Mayweather versus Punk
100%.
Over your two champions fighting.
100%.
Yeah. Which is crazy.
Yeah, 100%. I agree with it, though. You have to.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
But you have to.
Yeah, you
because,
have to.
Because people who are from the outside looking in are leaving the bar after that fight.
Yeah.
They want to see the
Only
circus.
That.
They've come to see the circus.
The WWE fans are owned. They don't know about Stipe. They don't know about anyone else. They don't know DC.
They're coming for the circus. They're not sticking around for the petting zoo.
Yeah. You're right.
I hate to say it.
Yeah, that's funny.
God, it would be so crazy, though. It would. I don't know.
I don't know, though.
But people would say that the UFC is a joke afterwards. And I don't buy into that. I think that the UFC is doing what the UFC should be doing, which is trying to make money. But at the same time, if you're trying to pass yourself off as a sport with drug testing and all of these things, it's a tough decision to make.
But just because it's the UFC doesn't mean we can have lower level fighters in it. Like, why not?
Yeah, why not? I'm with you. But I think the majority of people would actually argue against that. Not just you and not just a couple people. I think we're in the minority of people that think that you should make whatever fight's going to make you money as a promotion.
Yeah, but that would be the most watched fight ever.
For sure. Might do better than Mayweather McGregor, honestly. It might do better than Mayweather McGregor.
Probably. Yeah, probably.
Because you're also bookending it with some real legitimate good fights underneath. Like if you do two champion fights.
Even without that fight, you'll probably get almost a half a million pay-per-view.
But at the same time, you want people to see Stipe Miocic versus Cormier. You want people to see
If that's going to bring that much more people to watch your two champions fight, it's great for the sport.
100%.
It's amazing. You're getting 100%. More eyes. Those fans, you might gain another 250,000 fans. Who knows? You know, a million fans.
When I'm promoting this podcast, that's what I'm going to write.
Yeah,
we've got Ben Askren on, and we've got Aaron and Joe agreeing that CM Punk versus Mayweather should headline over Stipe versus Cormier.
I'm in for it. Yeah. I'm all in.
I'm with you.
But again, what also gets me too, and you hit the point on it. It's time of fighting in martial arts and sport has all changed. You said, I look at mixed martial arts as a sport, and all of a sudden it's like, or an entertainment. It's like, really, guys?
It can be both.
But at the end of the day, it's martial arts. What happened to martial arts being martial arts? Why does it have to be entertainment? Why does it have to be a true martial artist is someone like George St. Pierre? He doesn't care about the entertainment. I think we need more true martial artists in the sport now. And I think if we looked at MMA as a martial art rather than and what it really is, it's a martial art. It's a way of living. It's a true martial artist, it's a mindset, it's a way of living, it's the way we eat, it's the way we sleep, it's the way we train, it's different.
I know Robin Black's in the building.
Yeah.
I'm going to send him a text to see if he can come here, and we'll ask him that same question.
Yeah, and see what he says?
Yeah, because I think he'll say no way.
He'll say no, he doesn't agree with it?
Yeah.
The purest martial artist?
Yeah, I don't know.
So for me, kickboxing, I live my life as a martial artist. I'm not currently competing, and I live my life still as a martial artist. People are like, you're in the best shape. You kick good. You're in better shape. My IQ is better than I was when I was fighting. I'm in better strength. The only thing that's not as good for me right now is probably my anaerobic capacity because I'm not pushing my lungs like I used to. But I'll get that back in no time. My brain is better. My body, my IQ, everything is there. But I mean, I still live as a martial artist. Just if I was living for the sport, I'd be fat. I'd be eating whatever I want. I'd be drinking every night. I'd be doing drugs. No, but I live my life as a martial artist. So for me, I like to look at it still as a martial arts
instead
of
drugs,
a sport.
Though.
Yes, I do.
Yeah, but not. I mean, we're not talking about heroin or anything.
No,
we're talking about drugs that are legalized.
Legalized CBDs.
Yes.
But I mean, still, we had what was it? Catlin Vieira, 6-month suspension for.
Not Catlin Vieira, Cynthia Calvillo.
Cynthia Calvillo.
And that's a commission thing, and I think it's ridiculous, but it is what it is. I mean, she broke the rules technically. I mean,
I think a lot
did
of
she
people
not?
Know. Yeah. But I mean, I've heard they raised the levels of THC so much that you can basically smoke a joint the day before the fight
but
and still
it's
pass.
It's commission to commission.
Yeah.
Because if you do it, where was her last fight again? It was
it
was the one she lost.
She lost to Carza Esparza.
No, to Esparza,
yeah.
And that was in Vegas. Yeah. So,
I don't know.
I don't know how that
6-month suspension. They said they'll probably cut it down to 3, but she'll be off in that time anyways. Yeah. I don't think she's planning on
competing. If she goes to a drug awareness program. You know, she's aware of drugs. She had them.
Hey, UFC, do you know cannabis and CBD helps brain injuries and that's the name of the sport?
I don't think that they disagree with it. But I think that it's a WADA/USADA
thing. Like,
that they kind of have to play along with.
It's like Ontario allowing the UFC but not kickboxing.
Hopefully that changes soon. What's the deal this week? Is it changing? Maybe
I don't know. Well, we have the former CEO coming in, so I think March 21st.
Okay.
So hopefully we can get something going.
Yeah.
The plan is, again, rumors. I've told you guys three different dates last year and even this year in January, but July is the plan again.
It's not going to be like International Fight Week, though, is it? Like first week of July?
I don't know.
Okay, I hope not, because I'd like to go to it.
Yeah, it would be cool.
I'd like to just go and watch. One fight we didn't touch on, obviously, Cyborg versus Kunitskaya. And I will say this, Kunitskaya impressed me. Now hear me out.
Okay, I'm listening.
She took a massive shot from Cyborg. That first punch, I thought she was done.
That right hand, yep.
But she survived it, took her down, got her in the clinch, and looked very strong. Yep. She looked like she had a lot of, I won't call it power, but she had a lot of strength. She was able to really handle Cyborg in the clinch. She was able to get Cyborg's back. You know, Cyborg escaped. Cyborg's got a black belt in jiu-jitsu. She's not just a striker. She's very, very talented. She works really hard. But Kunitskaya surprised me. Like, I just thought that, and I mean, as soon as that fight got back onto the feet and they were striking again, you knew that she was done. It was just a matter of time. But I thought that her strength was really underrated, and I didn't really know what to expect from her. I knew she was more of a striking-based fighter, but I will say I was impressed with her game plan, and I thought that it was the right move to kind of test her in waters that she hasn't really been tested in a couple of years. And she came up short, but at the same time, I thought we saw a lot of promise from Yana Kunitskaya.
I mean, yes and no. I mean, I just think Cyborg's at a totally different level. I mean, even Kunitskaya was she, 3-2 in her last five?
Yeah, or 2-3 in her last five.
Yeah, 2-3, so she's not really dominant that way.
Or 2-1 or something, yeah.
Yeah, not a great record. Yeah, she did, but I mean, the takedown was like from way out. Like, I mean, she got it regardless.
I mean, the real MVP is her agent, who got her $100,000 to take the short fight on short notice.
But I mean, right away, like, you saw very elementary striking in Kunitskaya. Like, you saw right away, you see Cyborg throw a right hand and then another right hand and then another right hand, and she just ate every single right hand until she gave up. I mean it was okay. I think Kunitskaya could be good, but she just needs the right fight. Cyborg just shows her different level. Too big, too strong, too aggressive. I mean, I don't think we'll ever see her lose, to be honest.
Yeah. I wouldn't, never say never, but at the same time, who's going to challenge? I think Nunes has a shot.
Oh, she definitely does.
And that's the fight
probably
I really want to see.
Other than anyone.
Dana White says that's what he wants to see. I hope that they've scheduled that for UFC 224 in Rio. It makes a whole lot of sense to do that in Brazil. The only pay-per-view of the year, most likely, in Brazil. Usually they only do one a year. That's what I'm saying.
It could be nice, like you said. Wasn't there talk in Fight Week in July?
Yeah, that would be cool too.
Because
I think doing it in Brazil though makes a whole lot more sense. You got two Brazilians in Brazil.
Yeah, but I mean, you might want to expose them to the bigger market, because they'll probably be huge in Brazil anyways, right?
I mean, that's easy to say, but when you think about exposing to the bigger market, Nunes, I believe, was on UFC 200. I think she was on UFC 196, which is the biggest pay-per-view. She's been on, like, some of the biggest cards.
Yeah, but
she was on the fight when
she fought
Rousey. It was a big, you know, big box office draw. So, I mean, how much more exposure does Amanda Nunes need? And Cyborg, I mean, from early reports, this pay-per-view did 210,000 to 250,000 buys, which I actually think is a pretty high number given this card.
Yeah, especially when we didn't even see a picture of Kunitskaya on the fight card, which was a big controversy. But, I mean, yeah, very impressive. Like you said, very impressed with what came out from what everyone thought was going to be a boring card.
Yeah, a lot of storylines were built, and a lot of young talent was built up. So kudos to the UFC. I think they must have had the foresight to think that this would be the case. And they did a good job of building up a lot of their young talent. Dern had over 1 million eyeballs on her on Fox Sports 1. So they deliver for their carriers. And then, of course, you've got Ortega coming up, O'Malley looking great. There's just a lot that they should be happy about coming out of that card. Overeem versus Blades confirmed for UFC 225 in Chicago. Blades from Chicago, so he'll be fighting in his backyard. And I think if he wins, he should be next in line for a heavyweight title shot.
I think he does win.
Yeah, I think he does win.
I mean, Alistair's a friend of mine, but I just think Curtis Blades is just, man, like, his wrestling is too good for someone like Alistair. I mean, Curtis Blaydes isn't going to stand.
But then again, Alistair's Alistair doesn't get taken down very often, though. Like, I'd be interested to see when the last time he got taken down was.
Yeah, good point.
But Blaydes is a different kind of wrestler. I mean, we're talking about a guy who wrestling is his bread and butter.
Yeah, I mean, what Alistair has is everyone has to respect his stand-up striking, so they're a little bit more hesitant to want to shoot in on him because you don't want to get close to him with that power. But again, Overeem and Uberim are two different people at this point, right?
Yeah. It'll be interesting. It's an interesting style matchup. And I'm never willing to rule out Overeem, because whenever I start to rule out Overeem, he comes back and goes on another run.
Yeah, he's one of those guys. Yeah, exactly that point. You think his chin can't take it, and then he does, and he wins.
Although I will say, I'm pretty impressed with Blaydes for, after winning that fight against Hunt, saying, yeah, I want to fight either Overeem, Ngannou, or Cain Velasquez next. Yeah. It's like, whoa, okay.
Well, good for
this
him.
Guy believes in himself.
Well, you have to. That point, you have to have a path. Don't just do it to do it. I mean, you take too much damage in your life to do this. Don't just fight anyone. It has to make sense. So he's smart. Pick your fights wisely. Instead of fighting 10 times in a year, why don't you pick, like, three good fights and train and have a proper team in camp.
Rockhold, Robin's calling me right now. Should I take this call on the air?
Oh, you can see. Let's see. Go for it.
Robin, we're on the air, but I'm saying hello.
Hello.
Are you still in the building?
No, I have left the building.
Okay, well, maybe I can just get your take on it from using my phone as a mic. You know what? I'm just going to, can I call you on our line here?
Let's do it.
All right, I'm going to call Robin back. Oh, there he is. You can tap dance for me right now, Joe, and kill some time.
I don't know. I can't sing. I don't have any jokes that I've been going with. Well, yeah, you must really think Robin has a strong point on this. I'm nervous now. You have me nervous here. Not too sure what Robin's gonna say. And in Robin's perspective, would be awesome because he's fought as well. He trains. Good analyst. So. Curious.
We're dialing in real time. This is unprecedented for the podcast.
Hello?
Hey, Robin.
How's it going?
It's going well. So you were in the building. We were hoping to have you pop in but to give us your insight. But, you know, having your voice here in any capacity is great. This is the question that Joe and I were bouncing around. So UFC 226, you've got Stipe versus Cormier.
Yep.
Let's say somehow they can get a fight signed between CM Punk and Floyd Mayweather on that same card.
Yep.
And TJ Dillashaw and Demetrius Johnson's also on the card. What is the headliner?
Holy Well, in real life, in the real world of competitive sport, it is the heavyweight champion of the world versus the light heavyweight champion of the world. But in the world that we live in, it's probably a 40-plus-year-old undefeated boxer fighting a professional wrestler who doesn't really know martial arts all that well, who's also 40. That's probably the headliner in the world that we live in, because we don't live in a world that revolves around, you know, deserving, in quotes, or, you know, around talent or those types of things. We live in a commerce-based world, and we live in a world that would probably be the biggest thing going, and that's what they would put as a headliner. I hate it. I hate that I'm saying that, but I know it's probably true.
Okay, he bit the bullet. Common sense did take over for Robin. I thought that you would for sure argue the other way.
Well, I will.
He will 100%.
My life. I will argue that now, I try not to live in a universe where I'm frustrated by reality, because that's a really hard way to live, right? That you live in a world where it's like, God damn it, it should be the way I think it should be. But the way I think it should be, the heavyweight champion of the world against the light heavyweight champion of the world, two brilliant talents of modern martial arts skills, that should be, by all accounts, something that we should all care about. But the UFC, people like you, Joe, myself, all of us, we've done a piss poor job of showing those things and letting people see what is so special about human beings like Stipe Miocic and Daniel Cormier. And instead, we've allowed spectacle and sizzle to, you know, infiltrate the mind share. And so that's the reality. That's what they would do.
Well, but spectacle always, in this world, has always kind of taken. I mean, there's a reason that The Bachelor is the number one show on TV on certain nights. And it's not because of the high quality of programming. It's because it's spectacle. I mean, you're basically, you know, that you're going to walk into a car accident, basically. You're going to, so you can watch it.
For propose is that I believe you that The Bachelor is the number one show on television on some nights.
Oh, it has to be.
I was just saying I don't have to live, I don't want to fight reality, but I can hope that what you're saying is not true and The Bachelor is not actually the number one show on TV anywhere ever.
I'm pulling out the Google machine, but continue.
But my big point, Robin, was the sport of it's called mixed martial arts. And I know we had this conversation many times, but people are forgetting that it's still martial arts that we're doing. It's being put into this either entertainment or as a sport. I mean, yeah, fighting is a sport and it's a game. But I mean, my point was someone like myself, George St. Pierre, and a lot of these old school martial arts mentality do so well. And I mean, we need more of that still. I feel that people are, and these young athletes are going towards entertainment and sport rather than the true side of it, which is mixed martial arts, right?
And hey, man, Floyd Mayweather is a brilliant martial artist.
For sure.
Boxing is a brilliant martial art, and he is one of the greats of it. So he's not only spectacle, but yeah, man, I mean, that is a failure of the system. It's a failure of broadcasting. It's a failure.
No, but is it though? Because if you are going to use that as a conduit for drawing more eyes to the guys that should get the eyeballs of the sport, is that not doing your job?
No, because if we did our job better, they would already care. And by playing with this low-hanging fruit mentality that it's like, take a wrestler, a pro wrestler that's famous, and put him, that's a low-hanging fruit mentality. And every time we do that and we take the argument that this is good for the sport, we're perpetuating this lie. What would be good would be, and not just in fighting, but in politics and in the world, is if we showed people true beauty, not conflict and not controversy and not, you know, spectacle and not over-the-top nonsense, because the inevitable result is we put two men in there naked with swords until one kills each other, and then after that we say, well, that's not all that entertaining anymore. Maybe we need 10 men. Like, it just goes further and further and stupider, which is unnecessary when you are looking at human beings that are capable of such brilliance brought together with incredible skill. If people saw fighting, Joe mentioned himself in the way he is as a martial artist, people like George, if artists like them, true talents like them, or if people just saw fighting the way I see it, I'm nothing like them, but I am a connoisseur and a lover of this art form. Mm-hmm. If I did my job right and other people saw what I see, it would be unnecessary to see who hates who on Twitter and who's angry at who and who said what and who speaks better on the mic and who called out who. All of that would be so unnecessary because from my perspective, I look at it and that is silliness compared to the genius that would be Stipe Miocic versus Daniel Cormier.
Yeah, absolutely fair. There are just ways that you have to draw viewership. I mean, it's strange, and I will say The Bachelor was the number two rated show with 7.8 million viewers behind NBC's The Voice with 11.5 million viewers.
Really?
Where people get to expose their wonderful talents to the world that have yet to be discovered. So
yeah.
11.5 million people is a big number.
Impressive.
That's a big number.
A lot of people.
Well, here's the other question for you guys. Yeah. What are the odds if Mayweather fights CM Punk? Who's the favorite and what are the odds?
You go first, Robin.
I think Floyd Mayweather is a favorite as well as he should be. I don't know what the
they have the odds? They have the actual number?
There are odds. I'm going to look them up. There are odds on CM Punk versus Mayweather. So I know what they are if I remember offhand, but I'd like to hear what you guys think.
Well, that requires insight into how bookmakers do books, which I don't have, but my guess is he would have to be 4 or 5 to 1. The truth is that if Mitch Gagnon was fighting Floyd Mayweather, and for people listening who don't know who that is, they should, if they're especially Canadians, but he's a brilliant mixed martial artist, UFC fighter. He's injured right now. If he was fighting Floyd Mayweather, he should be the favorite. He would take him down and brutalize him.
Yep.
Whereas CM Punk is a blue belt in jiu-jitsu with no history of actual real wrestling in his life. And Joe could teach Floyd, with all the skills that he has, how to understand what happens when a wrestler comes close to you. Floyd's job would be, don't let this guy get a hold of me. If the best boxers in the world can't touch him with their fist, CM Punk can't touch him with a closed hand to get a hold of him by him just moving, and so he would knock out CM Punk, and he should, and it should be 5-1 or more.
Yeah, I'd have to agree with that. But I think the bookies might give an edge to that little bit of wrestling that he has. So I it might be 4-1 maybe, 3-4-1.
CM Punk -300 against Mayweather. Really? 3-1 favorite.
So it is really interesting, you know, the relative comparison that we use, the idea that, well, Floyd can't wrestle or do jiu-jitsu. Floyd doesn't need to wrestle or do jiu-jitsu. He needs to move his feet so that you can't get a hold of him. And Floyd would do that. And nobody who hadn't done combat, you know, I don't care how much. Another comparison, people will say, well, you know, train with Ben Askren or whatever. That's irrelevant. Ben Askren would take him down. But if I train with Ben Askren, I will not take Floyd down. Wrestling doesn't happen if somebody refuses to get in touching range.
Yeah, that's number one thing. I always say the most important thing about fighting is not how to hit, what to hit. It's understanding distance control. And as a boxer like Floyd Mayweather, you know distance control better than anybody on the planet. So that's why I totally agree with you.
Big time.
It's kind of strange that we're breaking this fight down right now, but to continue. Yeah. It's kind of a weird parallel universe we're living in, but go ahead, Robin.
We also, you know, George St. Pierre said, I want to be a better jiu-jitsu player than the jiu-jitsu guys, and I want to be a better wrestler than all the wrestlers, and I want to outbox the boxers. And other people thought, well, you can't be a good mixed martial artist unless you're a good wrestler. The way you deal with a wrestler is you don't wrestle. And
exactly.
The way you don't wrestle is you don't let him get a hold of you. Stephen Thompson against Johnny Hendricks, go back and watch that fight. Johnny Hendricks was confused because he was hoping Stephen Thompson would box with him until he grabbed him. And Stephen Thompson's like, you can't grab me. And so a lot of this is the way, again, it's the way that we, television itself, shares knowledge about these things. If you have a full-time job, you drive a bus, you have a family, you have hobbies, you don't understand this. All you do is you watch TV and somebody says, well, Floyd can't wrestle. Floyd doesn't need to wrestle because the other guys only kind of wrestled for 2 years. So, but you're right. What the hell are we doing? How and why are we discussing this?
Well, because
it's never going to happen.
I had told Joe that I thought that you would go with Cormier and Stipe and would be vehemently against, not that you're not vehemently against CM Punk and Mayweather headlining, but you would make a compelling case otherwise. But I guess...
Well,
you understand that this is a business, and
I have, for my own sanity, I have over the last 6 months of my life tried to operate inside of reality. Me and Ramdeen used to sit on television, John Ramdeen and I, when we worked together, would sit on television, and we would get mad that people didn't understand things like this, and how on earth could you promote...
Well, you and Ramdeen were both mad when I said that Thompson versus Woodley 2 was a boring fight. At least Ramdeen was.
Exactly. But now I live in a world where it's like, of course I would protest that it would be wrong that a fight like that would be a headliner over Cormier and Stipe. And of course I would think that's wrong. And of course I would think that reflects on the society we live in. All of that's true. But I also know where we live. And I know not everyone thinks the same. And I know that money talks. And I know that they would make that. But what I think and what would be done, what I would prefer and what I think is right and what is right to the masses are not the same thing. And I accept that.
Yeah, you might have a bankrupt promotion if you're going just by what Robin Black feels.
I disagree. I think the job would be, I think the failure of promotions like this is that at all of them, all the best, is that they believe the audience is not able to handle the education that the audience I know could handle. I see it every day. If you look, you know, as certain types of consumption of old media shrinks and the new media grows, look on Instagram, look on, you know, all of the new platforms, everything is smarter. Everything treats the viewer as it's smarter, and they're all growing.
But you know what I think the big problem is, if you don't mind me cutting you off?
Yeah, not at all.
I think the big problem is the level of respect in society has dropped. Do you agree with, I mean, I'm talking about in North American society, people are a lot less respectful, I think, than they used to be. And I think that the lack of respect shown to the different athletes in mixed martial arts and really combat sports as a whole takes away from people's ability to look at these people as fighters rather than commodities.
I think you're right. And I think, again, I think some of that, if we look at the root of how and why. So if we accept that what you're saying is true, and I do, that we are a little bit less respectful of certain things like that. Maybe, you know, maybe it's the nature of being a very, especially in North America, a very successful society for so long. And you know, who knows what the causes are. But one of the reasons that we all kind of look at things the same way is that whether you turn on ESPN or CNN or Fox News or CNBC or Fox Sports or any of these, mostly what you get is you turn on the television and you see two to three to five people sitting at a desk and arguing. On CNN, it'll be political people. On a sporting thing, it'll be Shaq and two other guys, whatever. People just sit there and they argue. They don't discuss things. They don't keep an open mind. They choose a side and they battle it to the death, regardless of how much they know. And that part, we watch on television people argue and debate, make a pick, defend it to the death, and debate it and argue it, and that's how we've all learned to act.
And that's also goes back to respect, because you're not having a respectful discussion. You're having a shouting match, so to speak.
And you know who's to blame? Television producers.
Yeah, I was going to say social media as well.
Yes, for sure. Social media.
Yeah, it's all. Instagram is a big contributor to it.
But are television producers to blame if that's what's driving ratings and driving revenue and they're trying to keep their job and keep their people employed? That's where it becomes a bit of a conundrum. Because I watch every night, not every night, but on many nights with my wife, I watch Power and Politics on the CBC. And it's a very respectful discussion about politics for the most part. You don't see a whole lot of debate. It's more of a dialogue. And then, then my wife will flip to CNN or flip to Fox News. And it's just a different style of conversation. But I don't think that the CBC's, you know, ratings would be as high as the debate shows, unfortunately. But there's also, you know, that's also, you know, government-sponsored, not government-sponsored, but it's paid for by the taxpayers. And they feel like they have to uphold a certain level of quality in their discourse. But then the other thing I want to bring up is you and Joe travel a lot. You go to different countries and you get to see how those people operate and what makes them tick and how they respond to each other as a society. And I think you guys can see a tangible difference between the level of respect in those countries versus in North America.
And no question. There's no question. I know Joe will probably agree. But one thing, if we're going to take a positive thing back and connect it to our conversation, when Cowboy Cerrone goes and he takes Yancy Medeiros to meet his grandmother, we all appreciate it. Why do we appreciate when they hug, when they appreciate each other, when they're truly thankful for having had this brilliant fight with another great artist or athlete? Why do we appreciate it? Because it's rare. And anything rare has inherent value. And whoever is going to go, and when every single person who makes a fight show or programs fighting or does the desk on, you know, CNBC or Fox or whatever, when everybody thinks we have to have them argue because that's what people like, if everyone's doing it, it's not valuable. The first person, I mean, Joe commentates at Glory. I commentate and analyze in South Korea, China, Russia, Poland over the last couple of years, and they do not consume sports the way we do. They do not talk the way we do. There is an appreciation for it. You're right, this is somewhat cultural, and you can't just knock Canada or the U.S. or North America for it. We're all to blame. We've all built this culture. So, you know, it is what it is. Man, we're having a deep conversation for a conversation about CM Punk versus Floyd Mayweather.
I was going to say, it went from debate to discourse pretty quickly.
I thought we were going to talk about relationships now and get nice and deep.
Well, it is a podcast format. We are long form. We don't really have any time restrictions, so to speak. But I think that if you just look at how crowds respond in different countries, like let's say when the UFC goes to Glasgow, Scotland, you just see that there's just a much higher level of appreciation than a lot of the fans have.
Well, Japan is the big one, right? Where everyone cheers and the respect in the crowd.
It's cultural.
Yeah, it's a big part.
Yeah, and if you do not win a fight in Japan, but you fought with courage and heart, the appreciation that they have for you, another aspect of our culture that we are all a part of, is we are so outcome-based. this guy lost, he sucks. This guy's done. How often, if you turn on Twitter after a fight, somebody loses, that guy needs to retire. He's the same man he was 40 minutes ago.
it's so annoying.
You know?
Well, Joe and I spoke about Andre Sukumtat earlier in the show, and I was talking about an interview he did with ESPN after the fact, saying, I probably shouldn't have taken him down in the third round, but I was rattled. I was out of it because I had taken some big shots earlier in the fight. And I said on Twitter yesterday, for us sitting at home, it's easy for us to know that he shouldn't be wrestling Sean O'Malley when Sean O'Malley can barely walk. But we also haven't just taken 41 shots to the head.
Yeah, and I mean, if I hit Joe with a jab, I probably can't hit Joe with a jab, but let's say I could, and I hit him six times, it's going to have no effect on him. It's going to in no way influence how he fights. If I hit you with one jab, you will move backwards and you will be discouraged from coming forward to take me down or throw a right hand. It's just human nature. With Joe Valtellini, somebody big and talented like him might have to jab him 60 times or 80 or maybe never. But we are in battle influencing each other's brains. You are teaching a child not to touch the element again, or you're teaching him that something is safe or something is a place you can go. All of these things, it is psychic warfare that is happening, trying to reprogram another person. And when people on Twitter or people who have never fought or people who are not connected to that truth look at something, we can't be mad at them or judge them that they don't understand that. I mean, you have to experience it. I only got to fight 9 times, and I didn't understand what was happening the first two, and then I understood it different the next four. And at 9, I think I have an understanding, but if I talk to somebody who's got 60 and I could get insight into how they understand combat, I would realize I know very little. And if you've never fought, you're in a psychologically, chemically altered state. You are to step in and do battle and access the chemicals that your brain is going to use, you change. The way you see the world changes. So we, the sober viewer, cannot understand what is happening and why the brain is working that way. And I've seen it so many times, and I try not to get frustrated, because why should somebody know that? They have a regular life. They're not doing that. But somebody will be like, why didn't Jose Aldo kick Max Holloway's legs? Well, two answers. One, he's stupid. Or two, he had a reason. And the audience on Twitter is suggesting he's stupid. He's one of the great fighters ever. He saw something or was taught something or experienced something that told him it was unsafe to do so or not the best course of events to do so.
Yeah, there's a lot, like you said, we don't know, because I had a fighter go the other day, and I watched him on Fight Pass, and I was yelling at him, like, why didn't you throw the left kick? He's like, well, I threw one and I hurt my foot. I was like, that's the exact point. I got so mad at him. I was like, the whole left kick was there all day. He's like, well, I threw it once. I hurt my foot. We didn't know that. He held it off, right?
Exactly. And that's one example that, you know, and there are thousands of them, and they're all possible. And sometimes the fighter doesn't know that. One of the most famous examples of this, if somebody just goes on Fight Pass and puts in Jason McDonald versus Damian Maia. Jason McDonald was a great all-around athletic MMA fighter from Red Deer, Alberta, I believe. Yeah. From Alberta, anyways. And he fought Damian Maia, and that guy took Damian Maia down. He wrestled him and took him down like 3 or 4 or 5 or 6 times in that fight. And they said after, why did you keep taking down Damian Maia? It's like, I have no idea. I kept saying, don't take him down. And then I took him down. Eddie Alvarez, one of the greatest game day performers of all time, said after he fought Conor McGregor, we were training the entire time for 10 weeks. Box very little and wrestle a lot. Don't fight at distance, only fight close the distance. Don't back up, only move forward. And I did all the opposite when I fought Conor McGregor. One of the great mentally strong fighters ever did that. And if we look at him and we don't understand what it was for him to experience that in reality, in real time, we'll look at it and go, Eddie Alvarez fought a stupid fight. Eddie Alvarez did not fight a stupid fight. Eddie Alvarez, you're fighting yourself, and that cliche is so true. You want to do something, but you won't let you do it for whatever reason you've been taught. Like I said, 26 jabs to Joe will not discourage him. 6 jabs to me will, and I will start moving backwards as my coach is yelling, move forward, move forward. I'll start moving backwards because my brain is been trained by my opponent to do that. Like that is happening every second of every single fight, always, forever.
Yeah, nonstop.
Nonstop.
That's what fighting is.
That's why it's so cool. And if people understood that when they see Cormier fight Stipe, they wouldn't give a about a professional wrestler, no matter how charming and famous he is, and he seems to be, and I have nothing against him. I'm happy for him. He gets to study martial arts and compete. That's great, man. It's an amazing thing. It'll be a great experience for him. But we shouldn't live in a world, I mean, we do, but where if people understood what was happening when they see Daniel Cormier from the time he was 3 prepare for those 25 minutes against Stipe Miocic, who's been bred as a certain type of synthesized athlete, they would never be concerned with, you know, a freak show as being the main event. It just wouldn't happen. But it is our failure to do it. It's the structure of the machine. It's the structure of the organization that is the UFC, that is broadcasting, that is Fox, that is, you know, communication, that is social media. These things have prevented us from sharing this beauty and this truth with people, and that's why we are having this conversation, and that's why probably that would be the co-main event, as big a travesty as that is.
Well, you've brought this back full circle, Robin. We appreciate your time.
I love you guys.
Thanks, Robin.
It's a thrill to chat with you, and Joe, I can't wait to see you in Montreal.
Yes, buddy, we'll see you soon.
All right. Cheers, guys.
There's Robin Black.
You just hung up on him?
Yeah, I don't know. I didn't mean to. Robin can probably still hear me. Robin, I'm sorry if I cut you off there.
I was like, you just hung up on him.
Yeah, I like Robin a lot. But, you know, when you get Robin on the phone, yeah, a question becomes, like, yeah, he's got such deep thoughts.
Just, he just recapped the whole UFC division. We went into everything. Yeah. We got deep. We talked fights. Yeah.
But you know what? At the end of the day, he agrees that would be the main event, which just surprised me.
Well, he made a good point. I just think as a whole and as society, as people, we just have to respect other people's craft a little more. Like, I'll watch TFC, like, so there's soccer on now, and I'm like, what the heck? I could play at this level. And I was like, no, I can't.
No.
Not at all. But for me and my athlete mentality, and I'm sitting in that comfort zone, I do it to other sports, and I'm trying to learn to turn that down. But that's confidence, man. But, I mean, I do respect the Japanese and the whole respect. We do need to respect our athletes. And what drives me nuts is when guys get knocked out, that guy, you know, needs the credit just as much as the guy who, you know, knocked you out. So
that's true, because they learned something that day.
They learned something. Let's respect our athletes a little bit more. And let's, I mean, as a martial artist, we always say, like, if I fight someone, do I want to hurt them? Well, yeah, in the fight, but afterwards, my whole point is I hope that person can fight another day and they can still work and do their families, because we still love each other in that kind of, you know, colleague way.
Well, we have no picks this week because we're going to do that next week. Last card in Orlando, we both lost. I had Eric Shelton. You had Josh Emmett.
Yep.
We live to work another day. I'm under 100 now. I'm below
back,
even.
And I'm
you're at $70.
Yeah, I was going to say 70-25.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, we'll make our picks next week for London. If Joe and I do the show together, we're still going to figure that out because we have a bit of sort of conflicting schedules, but we'll see. There's an article up on Ben Askren from this interview that you heard earlier in the show on tsn.ca/UFC, as well as all of our UFC content. Please go and check that out. And check out Joe Valtellini on YouTube. Look up Joseph Valtellini YouTube on Google. His latest videos are instructional videos on head movement and drilling defense. And if you basically want to learn how to kickbox from the comfort of your own home, this is where to do it.
Yeah, that's what's up. And that, I just literally put a 5-part series on defense, which is, people need to understand, it's so fun to strike, but the other half of fighting is not getting hit. So, I mean, everything you go on YouTube, you're going to watch a million things on how to punch, how to jab, how to kick. Yeah, I have that on my channel too, but you have to put it together with defense. So that's what my channel brings. So get on there, subscribe, and watch.
All right, there it is. So that'll wrap it up for this week. It was a lot of fun. That conversation was pretty crazy.
Yeah,
I enjoyed it.
It was nice and deep. I liked it.
Yeah. And we'll be back next week with a UFC Fight Night London preview. It's Verdum versus Volkov. That should be a fun one. See you then.
Thanks for listening to the TSN MMA Show. For all the latest UFC news, visit tsn.ca/UFC.